Hello, and welcome back to The Great Game, an Australian mega game podcast. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jack.
And thanks for tuning in to episode 3, How to Get Started.
Yeah, this episode we're talking about our own experiences in getting a mega game organized and off the ground, from setting on the game you'd like to run to finding a venue and getting a team together.
Yeah, we go through a lot of the boring logistical stuff like setting budgets, but we also give out some hot tips on how to deal with unique venue crises, like having a venue filled with pumpkins.
Yes. And also, we wanted to let you know in this intro that we are starting up work on an online mega game called Dark and Stormy Night. We're pretty excited about this one. It's going to be a thrilling gothic horror mega game inspired by a lot of things like Netflix's Castlevania series and things like that. And we're going to be playtesting it this weekend. So expect more news on that soon.
So lastly, just a big thanks to everyone who's been listening along so far. Let us know what you think and how we're going and whether we're covering the right things. We'd really like to hear questions from you guys and take prompts about what you'd like to see in future episodes, so get in touch for sure.
Right, and on with the show. All right, so today we're going to be starting from the ground zero of running a mega game, how to get started. It can be super intimidating, but if you have found out about mega games, watched a video or a podcast or something similar, you're interested in finding out more or getting into one or running one yourself, here's the next steps you can take in this podcast. And we're going to be running through the five things you're going to need to think about in terms of running a mega game or getting into them, which is one, a rule set. Two, getting a team together or players or moderators. Three, a venue. Four, players. Five, materials. So let's start out with step one, a mega game rule set, finding a rule set. Now, both of us started out by getting the age-old rule set, Watch the Skies. Is that right, Pat?
Yeah, that's right. That's the first thing I did after I watched that Shut Up, Sit Down video.
Absolutely. So getting into and downloading a rule set like that is a great idea. But obviously, the perhaps a better first step, if you can, we're in the situation, of course, in Australia where when we both started out, there weren't any mega games around near us that we could get into or could play. But nowadays, things have changed a lot. We've got more groups around, and it could be a better option to find a game for yourself and get into one. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely places around the world and communities that have a lot more diversity in games than maybe Australia does. But definitely, if you can't get along to a game, I think the first real step is to go and investigate other mega games that are available and, you know, at the very least, maybe have a read of them.
Absolutely. Yeah, so first of all, let's go through a couple of ways to find a mega game in your area. The first one is there's a site called megagameassembly.com. And if you go there, you'll find a thing up the top that says calendar. If you click on that thing, it'll have a list of mega games in different areas in the world. We're talking UK, US, Asia, Australia, all that kind of thing. If there is a mega game arranged locally near you, that's where you'll find it.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of the Mega Game Assembly website, it's also a really good resource while you're there to have a look at some free mega games that are available for download, which is also a good place to start.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So the next step, yeah, if you go there and you find there's nothing being run in your area at the moment, which there very well may be, next step, I would say click on free mega games on that site and you'll find a bunch of free mega games you can check out there. The one I would recommend personally as a free game is Aegean's Conquest. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's a Game of Thrones mega game. Maybe it'll be less popular now that season 8 has come out. Maybe less people are interested in it, but it's free. And the thing I really liked about it is it has a really in-depth section at the start detailing stuff for new players or new control people. And it runs through, here's what this is about, here's what you need to consider in a really in-depth way, which is awesome. The designer of that is C.S. Ross. So yeah, that's something I'd recommend. What about you, Pat? Do you have any rule sets that you might recommend?
Yeah, there's a couple of others on the Mega Game Assembly I'd recommend personally. One of those is Relics of the Fall, which is by Kiwi Game Design. This is a Mega Game based on the board game Scythe. And I believe it's been run quite successfully quite a number of times around the world, so it's got a lot of traction. And the other one I found interesting, which I haven't run or played in, is Infinite Horizons by Diversionary Games, which is a bit of like an alien planet habitation political sim. But one thing I found really interesting about that one was the rulebook was quite impressive. It's really sort of bridges the gap between what some traditional Mega Game rules can sometimes look like versus what you know, the modern board game rulebook looks like, and it does a really good job of getting that, you know, that feel about it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful design. Aegon's Conquest is a bit similar, actually, in that so something I should mention if you're reading it, Aegon's Conquest is a lot more on the mechanical side of the spectrum than a lot of other games. In fact, it's one of the only Mega Games I know of that has victory points, that the player with the most victory, the team with the most victory points at the end wins. So if you're reading it, just know that is something that is a bit different. It's not bad, obviously. It's just different to the normal thing. And Relics of the Fall, another fantastic rule set I've read. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'd also probably shout out, to not just give the Mega Game Assembly a monopoly on our recommendations. I have to mention the Mega Game Makers. Their website also has quite a number of free rule sets that you can get your hands on. More focused on the heavy political games and war games as well. And then, of course, there is Jim Wallman's website, which is Stone, Paper, Scissors. And that's where you can find the infamous Watch the Skies. But there's a whole bunch of other games and simulations that he's got on there. A lot of designs he's done for sort of the corporate world in training and education. So there's some interesting stuff available that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So Watch the Skies obviously is how we both got started. So that's a great option as well. I believe it's £40 from his site. And we'll include the links to all the stuff we're talking about in the description so you can check it out. That's great. Another option I think I want to just shout out is Den of Wolves by designer John Meisen. I hope Meisen, that's the right pronunciation. I would say personally, that's something I would look at if you have a bit more experience or a bit more money you can invest in it, because I believe the price tag on that one is £200 or something like that. But it has gotten a lot of rave reviews. People are really loving it across the world. So definitely something to check out, but maybe something when you have the money for it, or once you have gotten a bit more into the scene.
Yeah, and I think we could probably wrap up that little section about rule sets that are available out there probably by mentioning that little game called God Emperor. Could you tell us anything about that, Jack?
Oh, it's look, it's crap. Don't try it. look, God Emperor is my own game. Thank you for reminding me. So God Emperor is inspired a lot by Game of Thrones. It's a game of noble intrigue and backstabbing and that kind of thing. I'm quite proud of the rule set and really proud of the art we got for it. There's some beautiful pieces we got from a variety of artists in it. Typically, it costs 50 Australian bucks, which I think is 30 US at the moment or something like that. But a special offer, which we are going to do for this podcast, which I'm excited about, is for the next couple of months until the end of June, I am offering that game for free to listeners of this podcast. We'll put a link to that one in the bottom. If you click that link, it'll take you to DriveThruRPG, where you can download the game for free. So I do recommend that. I think it's look, if nothing else, it's great to have a game from such a handsome designer. Really,
yeah. The designer was very much one of the selling points for me. But yeah, really excited about God Emperor. That's one of the ones, one of the games that we'll hopefully be bringing to Sydney in the very near future. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, hugely excited about that. Yeah, and we may talk more about what the rule set's about at some other later episode. We'll see how that goes. So that's a good bunch of resources. Again, just to reiterate, the first option, obviously, if you can play an Omega game yourself, that's a great option. You'll see options for that on the calendar. Typically, Omega game tickets will vary. They'll typically have a ticket price. It may be $20 more. All depends on the game. That's the first step, I would say, if you're interested. If that's not available to you, check out one of these free rule books, like God Emperor, which is free now, or Aegean's Conquest, similar free books. And if you're interested in more investment, Watch the Skies is £40, Den of Wolves is £200, and there's a couple of other options there. Yeah, the final thing I'll mention, which we've just seen spring up very recently, is options for online mega games. Do you want to chat about that briefly?
Yeah, so there's always people looking for new avenues to take the mega game hobby. And as we've discussed in previous episodes as well, the definition of what mega games are is very fluid and always changing and always growing. But yeah, definitely given the current circumstances, there's some people who aren't so keen to go out to some public hall and get in touch with, 50, 100 others.
Yes, absolutely.
So there are people looking online. For example, there's a group in the UK, I believe, who are setting up to run Den of Wolves entirely online. I think that may have happened by the time this podcast gets out, but we're keen to see how it goes. I believe their plan was to run that via Discord and also using, I think, Roll20 or something similar to that for sort of visual and, interactions and using the map and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, really keen to see how those kind of live interpretations of mega games go online. But there's also a bit of attention looking at other ideas and other ways of using the internet for the gaming experience that comes with mega games. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Ah, absolutely. I think it's something we'll see more and more experimentation of. It's a really weird time to be starting a mega game podcast. Like, who knows when this podcast comes out, what the situation will be. At the moment, an online mega game might be your best bet at the time of recording, for keeping yourself safe, obviously, right? So I think where I've seen these posted is on the Mega Game Assembly Facebook page. That's something worth checking out. And the Den of Wolves one is free and available to different time zones. So great option if you don't have a mega game in your area. I think we'll start to see a lot of experimentation with this and a lot of bending of what mega games can be and what they can do online. So that's something, watch this space. We're looking at doing something ourselves, which I won't get into, but yeah, that's a really exciting avenue. But yeah, so yeah, that's basically, I think that's a good summing up on finding a mega game rule set. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, no, I'd only say, just to wrap that off, maybe to give some relief to some listeners or maybe spur up some debate. I'm definitely no expert, but I think you might be referring to Aegon's Conquest.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I've only read the books. I never saw the TV show. That's my sin.
No, you definitely made the right choice there.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so that's great. Yeah, so I would definitely recommend, if it's your first time either playing in a mega game or reading a rule set yourself, obviously what both of us have gone into is designing our own, but reading one of these is a great start. A team. If you want to run your own mega game, or even if you want to play in it, obviously, you're going to need to get a team together. Pat, when you first were interested in Watch the Skies and heard about that Shut Up and Sit Down video, what was your first step when it comes to getting a team together to run it?
Yeah, so for that original Watch the Skies, I had a pretty compact team. It kind of came about on a whim after the fact, once I'd started making plans and the game was full steam ahead. So I had my brother there who was running the UN game. I had a friend of mine who's a teacher who was interested in that, sort of intrigued by the educational side of things and how the game might be used. But ultimately it was just those friends of mine who I'd got involved early on and were super enthusiastic and just had some kind of knowledge base that might help them. So, they were used to playing the tabletop games like Dungeons and Dragons, that kind of thing, or maybe some of the board gaming games, and just familiar with some of the general terms that would make life easier for me. But no, I was very lucky just to have a few enthusiastic people around, because it was difficult going headfirst into the unknown and trying to convince people to go with you.
Yeah, awesome. Similar for me, I did get rope in a bunch of friends into it. But the way I got started was by responding to a thread on Board Game Geek, where people were chatting about the idea of doing a Brisbane mega game, and I ended up heading that up, basically. And so as a result of chatting to people on that thread, I ended up getting a bunch of people into my team who I'd never met before, some of whom I'm still fantastic friends with. I think that's a great option if you don't necessarily know many people in your area, is to see if you can find on the Board Game Geek website, which is primarily dedicated to board games, obviously, but does involve mega games from time to time. See if you can find the sub forum for your location and start a thread there. See if anyone's interested. Reddit is another place I found a lot of success recruiting people from. I made a forum, a Reddit post on advertising God Emperor and got some people involved in that. So forums, obviously, it's a great place to start if you don't necessarily have people who are interested in your friend circle, I would say.
Yeah, and I think the good news is, I think you would have seen the same with Brisbane, but here after that first game, we instantly had the pool of people who were really keen to do whatever it needed to be done to make sure another game happened. And so moving forward after that first hurdle, I've never been short on getting people coming, putting their hands up to help run a game or even design it.
Absolutely.
The momentum of the community just keeps growing and growing.
Absolutely. Absolutely the same here. Yes, I think the first one, it depends. The first one can be the hardest in some ways because you just don't know how it works. I'd say, yeah, and in a team, it's nice if you can get people who are interested in tabletop RPGs, who've run stuff like Dungeons and Dragons before. But ultimately, all you're looking for is people who are passionate, right? And people who are excited, and they're going to get up in the morning and chat to you about what's going to happen next. That's the ideal.
Yeah, and those are some of the things that I sort of ask about or try to get on my team when I'm putting together a team to run a game. You do want some of that experience with previous mega games, but also some gaming experiences. It goes a long way. But it's really good to have the diversity in the team as well. So people who've got some background in, running events or good at public speaking or that kind of thing. But I think enthusiasm, just the desire to really get in there and help run it and make it a good event, that sort of trumps everything. And finding people with that kind of drive is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're fortunate in that respect. But yeah, I mean, even if... we were fortunate at the start of... when we were running our first mega game, one of the people who responded to that forum thread previously worked in budgeting or something like that. So he was able to work out the figures of, here's how much we'll need to print these materials and print these rule books and all that kind of thing. So, hey, any skill set's welcome, right? It's just about getting people who are passionate. And I think that at this point, we're hitting that critical mass, to me at least, in Australia at least, I see it, where people are out there interested in mega games to the degree that it's not as hard to find people. Maybe that's just me in the position of having run a few before, but that's my thought. Yeah, so that's step two, right? Once you've checked out a rule set or you've gotten interested, maybe even played in a mega game yourself, and you've got some people who you've chatted to a bit about, they're interested, they're excited to get started. I think for me personally, the next step would be finding a place to run it. How did you go about this one for your first game, Pat?
Yeah, I actually got off really easy on getting a venue for my first game. I already had some pre-existing contacts and sort of a relationship with a local library where we ran these games. I'd been involved with them for events like Youth Week and teaching people how to play Dungeons and Dragons and that kind of thing. So I already had access to this venue and these people who were really supportive of the idea. So for the first three games, we actually used that library, and access to the facility was totally free, which really, really helped in getting people to come along, in getting, reasonable ticket prices. It was really good. The venue itself wasn't like the most amazing venue, but we couldn't really see past the caveat that it was free. So, yeah, in those early years, that's where we ran it. Pretty much since then, finding venues, the story's gone downhill and it's become a lot more harder, a lot more difficult. But, how about yourself? How was your first run of Watch the Skies as far as venues go?
Well, we were very fortunate as well. One of the people who replied to that forum thread ran the local bridge club, the Woolloongabba Bridge Club. So it's a place where people, old people regularly go to play bridge. They let us have it at a very small price to rent the place, and it was a fantastic venue to run it. Finding a venue can be difficult, but those kinds of local halls, libraries, if you have a bridge club, stuff like that, those are good places to check out. You do need the checklist to look out for is, number one, you're going to need a large amount of space to run it, if you want to fit 30 to 50 or more people in it. Number two, for me, the biggest thing obviously price, right? Look, if you can get a free one, that's awesome. A free library, do it. Let them know it's not for profit, all that kind of thing. That's a great option. Just Google around, see what's in your area. For me, number three is getting a place that lets you set up all of the materials and stuff before the game starts. We were hugely lucky with the Bridge Club. They let us set up the night before, even, which is amazing. And if you can do that, I recommend it. But after that, we ended up going to this other place where we were only able to get into the venue like half an hour before the game started. So we needed to be like a SWAT team. We like had all the materials. We had the map rolled up over our shoulder. The door beeped and let us in, and we ran in there and started slamming stuff down to get all the materials in place so that people could play the game at 9 o'clock, right? Yeah. What do you think? Is there anything else specifically you look for in a venue, Pat?
Yeah, I think all I'd add to that list is really just the comment on the pricing here in Sydney. It's actually really, really difficult to find venues. We've got a lot of them, but to find them in the price range for a maker game is really difficult. Beyond that, the other thing that I really look at is access to the facility, not just for physical accessibility for people and the facilities that they might need, but geographic access and location. There's a lot of places that we could run games in Sydney, which would be a real trek for people who need to come from other parts of the city or need to rely on public transport. That's always a big one. So just looking for those kind of things. Is there a train? Is there a bus? Is there parking, which is really uncommon in Sydney? And then also just access to the facility, the venue before the game, so that you can just double check on everything that they have on hand, like the furniture and that kind of thing, how much time you're going to have to set up, what facilities they've got, whether there's kitchens and bathrooms and all that kind of thing. I think all that's just really important.
Yeah, it's event management, right? It's a huge part of it is, so, yeah, what facilities are they going to have? And your detail is great. If you have the capability to have one person who's focusing on these kinds of details, that's awesome. Most people, at least me, right, when I'm running a mega game, these kinds of details are not necessarily what you're excited to talk about, right? Are the bathrooms accessible to disabled people? What kind of parking options are there? How close is it to public transport? You can get into a lot of the nitty-gritty. And again, this is a bit further down the track, like start out just looking at the rules or playing a mega game. So we're getting a bit more into the detailed stuff now that is perhaps a bit more intimidating, but it's really about making sure that your venue It has a great cost. It's going to be easy for you to run the game in. It's going to be easy for you to set up, get everything together, and run it on the day. And then it's going to be accessible for your players. They can reach it. It's got the facilities they need. One thing we actually do is we always like to have a chill out room, right? Which is just somewhere, you know, for people, because Maker Games can be in some ways pretty overstimulating, right? Is just a quiet room somewhere that people can go when they need to have a break.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually something I encountered for the first time when I was down in Geelong to play there, Watch the Skies. And I think it's something, it's a really good idea, and it's really, really suited to these kind of events.
Absolutely. And food as well, I'll mention, is, you know, have a think about if you're going to be running it over 6 hours or more, obviously food will need to be a consideration. One thing we've done in the past is include food in the ticket price and get a delivery service to bring over. You know, you could talk to Subway, whatever you need to, just get them to deliver it to you so that players don't need to care about it. Or you could go the option of just getting letting players pick up stuff on their own if you're close to takeout and that kind of thing.
Yeah, on food and catering and that kind of thing, keeping people fed throughout the day is really important.
Mm.
I've definitely experimented with a few things, from the classic just everyone BYO to having some sandwich platters that came in and were just shipped out somewhere on in, you know, to a main table and everyone helped themselves. To one of the games where we had formal caterers come in and wander around Wow. with different platters of stuff. And it's really interesting, the I'm not going to say severity, but just the polar opposites of the feedback that you get on what people want from that catering. There wasn't one time that I did, you know, one of those catering methods that I would get feedback and it was all positive or all negative. There's people who seem to have really strong opinions about all the different ideas. You can't please everyone. But I think it really is important to factor it in and make it clear to players, you know, whether or not they need to come prepared or if there's options available to them to buy some food, because it's a long day and it really, yeah, wears people down. So I actually think the most success that I have had was with the games that I ran. Well, one of the games I ran last year, which was sort of optional catering. So when people did go online and buy their ticket, there was an option for them to say, yeah, I'd like someone to bring me a pizza halfway through the game. And that worked really well because people had that opportunity to say yes or no. And those who said no were very well prepared and brought their own food, and it worked out well.
Awesome. I think that's a great option, is have it optional like that. That's awesome. Yeah. Is there anything else you would mention that you're looking for when you're arranging stuff with the venue?
Yeah, I think one thing actually that I probably encountered for the first time in one of our last games last year was when doing that whole inspection phase, checking with the venue staff or whoever owns the venue about other groups or people who might be there on the day who are using it. We had one of the games that we ran last year in Sydney. We had some people there who were using it in the morning, another part of the venue, but that was, you know, very much segmented away from us. But we didn't know or consider that maybe there'd be another group there, and they didn't know we were going to be there. And I don't think they were too impressed just because of the rowdiness and the noise and that kind of thing.
Look, there's all kinds of – look, I could fill a podcast with the kinds of crazy things that have happened with venues. It's the most unpredictable part of a mega game, and perhaps one reason why you should check out an online mega game, certainly at the moment. I won't go into it. We walked in and the whole room was just full of shopping trolleys with all these pumpkins in them on the night before the game.
Okay, anyway, that's interesting.
Look, it's a long story. I think – we probably won't. We don't. I think that's enough of the nitty gritty. I don't want to scare people of the horrors of venue management.
that actually sounds like a mega game in itself, where you have to go in and crisis manage this pumpkin room.
Yeah, no. Before you start the game, just design a separate mega game where the players find a venue for you, and then you just use that venue, and the problem is solved. You know, it's a crisis in itself. And you know, the mega game that you decide to use will give you the needs you have in terms of what kind of rooms you'll need, what kind of areas of the game, whether, for example, Watch the Skies, you'll need a council room, which is some kind of separate space, a separate space for the war room, a separate space for the UN, a place for the aliens to make secret plans, and then a big space for all the humans to exist in. But each mega game will give you the requirements you need for that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like just before we progress, it's probably worth mentioning here that we are really getting in the nitty gritty and talking about event management and that kind of thing. And that really is something that I think some people might not consider when they're first thinking about getting involved in these kind of events and these games, that the role of running these things is really, there's a lot of different facets, like we were talking about getting our teams together and the kind of skills that you need. Without even looking at the design process where you create your own mega game, which we haven't even touched on just yet, you've still got, you know, you've got financial planning, event management, communications kind of stuff where you need to make sure that people who are involved in the game are communicated to well and get things well. Then you've got, yeah, like I said, on the day, event management, often dealing with different vendors if you have to hire things or all that kind of stuff, all the way to running the day, having people there, making sure things are safe and people are insured and everything's going to plan. And then afterwards, the pack up, getting people out, moving people to another location, if that's happening. There's just a whole bunch of stuff in there. And I think it sort of speaks to what we were saying before about one, that it's not really a one-man job, and two, that you really need a diverse team with a lot of different skills who are able to sort of people who can fill those gaps.
Definitely. That's why you need to make a team first. And that's one of the things I love about it. I love how multidisciplinary it is, and getting to collaborate with all these talented people of different types and exercise different parts of your brain. It's awesome. And yeah, so let's get on to the next thing I would say is probably the actual materials for the game. So in a mega game, typically it'll say up front, if you download a rule set, it'll hopefully say up front, here's the stuff you will need to run this game. Now I'll go through it for Watch the Skies because it's what we've played. You'll need rule books for each player, usually. Those will have to be printed out. You'll need tables, obviously, that's a part of venue management. You'll need a world map for everyone to move stuff around on. You'll need a bunch of poker chips for resources. I'd say those are the biggest things that you're going to have to worry about. And then a bunch of different pieces of paper, little game components, miniatures for units, that kind of thing. But typically, I would say most mega games, you're going to need a bunch of rule books, a bunch of tokens. If you can find poker chips that you can borrow and stuff like that, that's awesome. And a map, a large world map of some kind that a bunch of people can gather around at once.
Yeah, that's sounds pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And so what we did, at least for ours, is we printed a bunch of stuff out. I was at uni at the time, and I printed a bunch of stuff out at my local uni. In terms of different little team briefing sheets and stuff like that. This is the part of the game that you will need a budget for. You can choose, of course, to run your mega game for free, but in terms of printing out these components, it's going to have some kind of cost. So having a look at the actual figures of each rulebook will cost us this much if we print it out in black and white. So calculating all that stuff out, if we get a player to pay this much per ticket, that'll cover our costs. That's what most people generally do, is look at covering their costs.
Yeah, definitely the budgeting and financial management side of things is really important. Something that I have proudly never been able to achieve, making back all the money that went into a game. And that's just my issue with always getting a bit too excited, a bit too late in the piece, and my unbridled enthusiasm. But I am getting better at it, and I find it's something that it's sort of challenging in the environment that we're in Australia, I think, and I don't think we're alone in this, that our games keep getting more and more intense as far as the design goes, like the physical design, how everything looks and feels, and all the components. Like some of the previous games I've run had a lot of 3D printed components, and we always have really high quality printed cards, like playing cards, that kind of thing. So it always sort of drives the price up, and I find it difficult to to meet those costs sometimes, especially if it's not all planned out to a T from the start, which is really difficult if you are designing your own game. A couple of things that I really focus on at the moment to try and ensure that we meet those costs is one is designing games that, or designing components that can be used across multiple games. So say there's little tokens or cards or that kind of thing, things that can be reused easily that are generic enough to be reused in other games, so that it's not just a one-off purchase or, you know, expense, and then it goes out the door. The second thing is obviously rerunning games is really useful to save you a bit of money, because you've already got all the components there. Everything is exactly as it needs to be. All the money's been spent. It's just getting the venue again and then getting some more people in. So when the demand is high enough, which I think it's sort of getting there. I know it's there in Australia, in Sydney at least, and down in Melbourne, the crowd is there for running events more than once in quick succession. It just hasn't really been tried just yet. So, that's another way that you can maximize how much money you're getting back to cover those costs.
Definitely, definitely. So again, this is going to depend completely on your game and what you need. Typically, I think both Pat and I have, we've really focused on the art and the graphic design. I know Melbourne Mega Games have done some really beautiful graphic design for their stuff as well. And that raises some costs often, right? If you want to get the best quality components, you don't need to do that. And most Mega Games I see around the place will focus on doing a cheap and cheerful one so that it's very accessible for players, doesn't need to have a great ticket price, all that kind of thing. And that's awesome. So it's up to you, right? Do you want to go the all-out route? Do you want this to look like a polished, beautiful experience that's like a board game, or like that has a lot of atmosphere? Or do you want it to feel it's more like a local D&D game? You want it to be accessible for people as much as possible, and you want it to be low cost for the players. That's your choice, basically.
Yeah. It's super important once you start getting a community forming around you, finding out what the players want as far as those things goes, like the quality of components, I like to call them. Some players really want high quality stuff. They want to be immersed in things visually, and they want nice little tokens to hold or pieces to look at or maps to ponder over. Sometimes some players don't, and also those same people might change their mind depending on what kind of game it is. By no means, though, like, does sort of heavy design and lots of graphic design and prop work equal a good game, but it's definitely a factor, I think, that you just need to be wary of when you're sort of pitching it all to a certain audience. So it's definitely all about sort of finding a middle ground of what the audience that you've got wants, and just getting a balance that suits you and them between where that quality and the affordability kind of meet. And that can be a bit tricky if you're enthusiastic like I am.
Definitely. I think for me, I would say that the amount of work we've put into graphic design and art has probably helped us get players. I think that's probably some of the reason. And I think that's something that I see a lot from a lot of Australian designers across the board. Melbourne Mega Games looks great, as you know, which we had the interview with previously. Excellent graphic design there, and I think perhaps that's one of the reasons why people are so keen. I wouldn't say it's the only reason, but maybe one of them, so that might be something to consider as well. But I would say if it is your first mega game that you're running, completely up to you how you do that. But yeah, so to sum up that, basically the first thing you want to do is make up a budget of, like, all right, we've got this many rule books, we've got this many tokens. Beg, borrow, and steal as much as you can. When we played our first mega game, we were able to get a bunch of poker chips from the Bridge Club where we ran it. So that obviously is amazing. If you know a friend who plays poker, get a bunch of poker chips. Every mega game is going to need some kind of tokens usually. Once you've got that budget up, that's when you can get into the next stage of the game, which is getting your players together.
Yeah, and that's never a small feat either. So especially sort of when you're starting out for your first event. How did you guys go in Brisbane, Jack, when you were organizing your very first mega game?
It was really good. I don't think this is typical. We were very lucky, maybe, but we had a great turnout for it. We had, I think, we might have had one or two dropouts on the day. But apart from that, we had the full 50 players for our first game of Watch the Skies. And we had so many people interested. It was crazy. We had someone who flew over from New Zealand to play in our first game. Oh, wow. In Brisbane.
Okay, that's pretty impressive.
Absolutely. And, you know, I talked to that guy. I was like, listen, I don't know if I could be responsible for this. It's our first game. We'll probably, like, the next one will be better, please. Like, because I'd never ran a game before. I don't even know if this game is going to fall apart halfway through. But he was keen. And I think that's something that has been really great for us in Australia, is that people really want to play a mega game. What about you, Pat? What was your first game like?
Yeah, so the first game for me, as far as getting players involved, was a bit of an odd experience. The majority were people I didn't know.
Wow.
Which was not what I expected. I kind of assumed that it would really just be people, like close friends of mine, and then faces and names of people who are, you know, one step away through those mutual friends, but people I kind of knew of. And instead, it was nearly all new faces. This news just of this game and what it was, definitely helped out by the Shut Up, Sit Down video, was just spread through all these channels that I had no control over, and got to a lot of different little subgroups that were really enthusiastic. So a lot of a lot of anxieties came with that, obviously, on event game day. But and I had the classic kind of, oh, geez, I'm way over my head in this stuff. Those feelings in the morning when all these people were rocking up. But it was really good. It was very surreal that the word could spread that way, but it was great. And I have to say, the vast majority of the people who just showed up to that first one, I'm good friends with now, and they've come to everyone since. And we just got a really solid foundation, luckily, off the bat. And that includes a couple James and Justin, who we'll be talking to, I think, next episode about a game that they've designed. So they just came in at the start, stuck with us all the way through, helped design a couple of games, and then branched off and started their own thing, which is awesome. And yeah, at that first game, I think from memory, we only had one person who didn't show up. Shout out to Greg. none since then. So all the games I've been to or have run in Australia, I haven't, to my knowledge, there haven't been any people not showing up or last minute dropouts or anything like that, which looking at the broader worldwide global community, I think that's a pretty impressive stat. So we have a very enthusiastic audience.
It's huge. Yeah. I think, look, in Australia, there is a real hunger for mega games. People want them. So when we were talking before about the nitty gritty of venues, materials, all that kind of stuff, that's tough. But in my experience, at least, once people really desperately want to be or play in a mega game, so once that's over with, there is a huge enthusiasm and selling tickets, especially if they're at, if you're just covering your costs and it's not a high ticket price, it hasn't been an obstacle for me. In different places, maybe different, obviously. Like, so Pat, how quickly did your most recent, that the Battlestar Galactica inspired mega game,
So the Battlestar Galactica inspired game that James and Justin designed in 2019, last year, so it sold out not quite immediately, but nearly all of the tickets did go immediately in the first few hours, and then they had a few stragglers over the next week or two, which I think is the standard model for selling our events out here. For the Crown last year as well, that sold out in the first, I think, 4 hours or so.
Oh my god.
Which was pretty impressive. And then we went to take it down to Melbourne, and so Tristan and Nelly and Melbourne Mega Games, they sold out their event, their version of it, almost immediately as well.
Yep.
Which I don't think was sort of the demand for that game. It was just a demand for a game in general, which is that sort of that scarcity that we've got here. They went really quickly. So did Melbourne Mega Games. They were doing It Belongs in a Museum, and I believe that sold out so quickly that they actually immediately released sort of a second run of it, which also sold out very quickly. And unfortunately, they weren't able to run those due to these crazy times we're living in, but looking forward to seeing those in the near future. There's definitely a huge sort of scarcity of games here in Australia and across all the cities. People are just jumping in all the time. The community is growing. So when those tickets go up, it's becoming a real, it's like kind of frenzy, to the point where when I was talking to my crew about our plans this year, sort of pre-pandemic, we had planned to run events multiple times in a row, sometimes in the same, you know, the same fortnight, just because we know that we can sell those tickets. So it's going to be interesting to see what the calendar looks like when we're all allowed to go out again. But yeah, it's there's a huge scarcity for sure.
Definitely. Now, if you're in an area where that's not the case, I think I had great success with God Emperor posting on the board games subreddit saying, hey, I'm running a mega game in Brisbane. That worked well. Reaching out to local forums and local game stores, I think, is a great idea. And just say, hey, listen, we're interested. We're running this local event. Would you be interested in helping us get players? And obviously just talking to your friend group. Yeah.
Yeah, we when we're getting started, we're doing the same. We had some posters and flyers and that kind of thing that we put in the game shops and the hobby stores. We sort of approach schools and universities with like the different clubs. That's actually where a large number of my original players that I mentioned earlier came from. Just one person sort of spread the idea to a university, and then it spread from there, sort of peers into different clubs, and then those people got involved, so it was kind of like several degrees of mega game. But yeah, I think it's important just to know your audience, and specifically with mega games, how broad that audience can be. So you have to cast a pretty wide net. You don't want to just focus on one sort of avenue of getting the word out.
Yeah, definitely. And so most of our players come from our Facebook group at this stage, which is Brisbane Mega Games. And at the start, I think most of them came from the, you know, local groups like the Queensland Uni Game Society and stuff like that, right? Finding little role-playing game groups like that, like your local uni's game group, stuff like that. Those are where you're going to find the players. So have a look at your local universities. It's a great place to start as well. Game groups there and that kind of thing. Yeah, so once you actually are getting the players in, typically in Brisbane, we use Eventbrite to sell the tickets because it's a free platform. It handles event processing. You can just easily handle all of the money side of things without worrying too much about it. What about you, Pat? What do you typically go for?
Yeah, so personally, we've always used Eventbrite. It's very easy to use, intuitive, and it gives you a lot of control over, you know, different types of tickets or add-ons, like I mentioned earlier, where people could choose to buy lunch or something. The only problem with Eventbrite is that it does have, like, it's a little bit more expensive because it does have fees attached. So yeah, based definitely. On, there's a certain percentage of each ticket that goes to Eventbrite for hosting it all, which is totally understandable, but it just means the players will have to end up paying a little bit more. And I guess that is a bigger factor the cheaper your tickets are, because it's more extra that they have to pay. The only other method I've used, which was for the first game that we ran here, which was, you know, it was solely just because I had no idea what I was doing and didn't conceptualize that there was any expense to cover because we had a free venue and all that. And I was just taking like a few bucks from people at the door, more or less as like a donation for putting up with this experiment we were running. So, but I wouldn't by no means would I go back to doing that. It was just sort of an intro. And then the only other alternative I've really encountered is like some groups they kind of run things a bit more manually. And I guess really the output is that there are no fees, but they just get player information through Google Forms or an email or something like that. And then once they've got it all, they go out and ask people to pay by a certain date, you know, do a PayPal or something. And it's a lot more manual process, but yeah, I suppose it's a little bit cheaper. But yeah, that's all I've really encountered.
Yeah, definitely. And so there was one time where someone wasn't able to access the Eventbrite thing, so I did it manually for them and that kind of thing. But for me personally, that thing of getting payment at the door or whatever, it's just the kind of the last thing I wanted to be worrying about on the day, you know what I mean? So the great thing about Eventbrite is it just gets it out of the way and you don't need to worry about it as much with these different manual processes or chasing people up for payment. It's just when they get the ticket, they give you the $20 and that's it. Awesome. And then, you know, once you've got the players, it's on to actually just running the day. Typically, a mega game might go for 6 hours. You might have it from 9 to 5 to account for setup and lunchtime and stuff like that. You'll want to get in a bit earlier than that, set things up for everyone to arrive at 9 o'clock, go throughout the day, and then have a plan to go to a pub afterwards and decompress and debrief. Pat, I think you mentioned before the show you've got a checklist you usually run through before the day. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, this is kind of just like some ideas that popped into my head. I definitely usually create a custom checklist or to-do list for each game, sort of based on what their needs are and the venue. But these are just kind of some things that it's sort of important to know, I think. A big one is what you need to set up and when. So for example, with Jack's sort of ninja half hour window of getting everything set up in time, it's really good to know the lay of the land of the venue, where everything needs to go, what furniture is available and where it's stored, just so when you pop in, you can immediately just start delegating jobs and everyone knows what to go and do. We usually give ourselves about a 2 hour setup time. And unfortunately, at one of the last games, it was a game where we had the most amount of setup to do, and that 2 hours became 1 hour, and it was, the players did suffer, unfortunately. But we usually have about 2 hours, and usually that is a lot. That's pretty tight. It keeps us pretty busy because there's a lot of emotions are pretty high in the morning, and it's good to be able to make sure people know what to do. Having a control meeting before the game starts is really important. Just gathering everyone around, setting expectations about what's going to happen when you press go on the clock, how you want people funneling into the event, all that kind of stuff. One thing I wrote down that's important is to get breakfast, have breakfast.
Completely. I often don't. I just have coffee for breakfast, but I know I shouldn't.
It's pretty vital. Yeah. It's something that people usually skip over, and usually I'm pestering my control team to make sure that they do it, or someone's pestering me about me doing it. Eating in general throughout the day is important, and it's good to make sure that your control team are, because it's really easy not to. Checklists of what needs to happen are really useful. So usually, for example, I'd have a checklist of where all the different tables go, and then what items need to go on every single one, where all the props spread out throughout the space. We've got a ticket sort of player name list to check people off at the door. All of this kind of just general event management administration, I guess you'd call it, is really important. It makes life easier, and it just prevents you from showing up rather like just rocking up with a big bag of components and hoping that you'll just get it all set up. That's one thing I've learned over time, for sure, as I get more and more intricate with my designs, and there's more and more little moving pieces and tokens and all kinds of stuff. The way you pack everything up and have everything labeled, and it's really clear when you open up the boxes or whatever you've got it in, what's what and where you need to take it, saves so much time.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. And I think, I think the main thing I would stress about the nitty gritty of running the day is that it's okay if things go wrong, and they probably will. Right. Ultimately, I think, and things, so many things went wrong on my first mega game, right? Like things falling apart and stuff, you know, things that you might be worried about in terms of game mechanics of like, oh, what happens if someone gets infinite money or whatever? That stuff will probably happen, right? But ultimately, it's having these 50 excited people in the room role-playing and working with a passionate control team. That'll nail it, right? Like, it doesn't matter if maybe some stuff goes wrong with the food, maybe this happens, maybe this minor issue happens with the venue. Ultimately, it's about just taking care of your players, take care of your control team, and have fun, right? Those are the big things I would say.
Yeah, yep. They're the golden rules.
Yeah.
And stay calm.
Stay calm. Yeah, look, and again, just to reiterate, it's okay if things go wrong. They probably will go wrong. As long as you follow those three steps of taking care of your players, taking care of your control team, and have fun, stay calm. Those are the big things I would say. And I'd say that is a fairly decent, comprehensive 0 to 100 getting started to running the event on the day summary. What do you think, Pat? Is there anything we didn't cover there?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add is enjoy it. Like, enjoy the chaos. Breathe it all in. You're not going to experience that kind of chaos anywhere else. And it's going to be crazy. And, you know, afterwards, I mean, disregard how you feel at the time. And afterwards, you're going to love it. You're going to look back very fondly. So just enjoy the manic explosions around you.
having chatting in the pub afterwards, that is something I do actually want to emphasize. Make sure you have some kind of meeting place to hang out and chat about the game after it's done, because that is one of the funnest elements, is decompressing. Now that you don't need to worry about all the organizational stuff, you can listen to how much fun people had during the game and all the great, amazing stories that came out of it, and just luxuriate in it. Have fun, you know? Like,
yeah, I won't argue with you there. I think the after party and whatever the social affair that happens after the game, super important, probably a necessity. I don't think I'd enjoy a mega game without it. The only other thing I was going to add actually is maybe a controversial point, but I think it's really important, as you being the orchestrator of everything, reading the room and sort of knowing the language, knowing the energy of the game that's happening around you, and sort of knowing when to call it a day, even if the script or the narrative hasn't run its course yet. Just knowing when people have had enough. I think we, a couple of last games that I've run, we have called them early or sort of off schedule, just because it was clear that things were dying down, the stress was high or the energy was low. There were certain pivotal moments that were great for sort of ending points as far as the narrative goes. So I think it is important just to keep an eye on that and make sure that you know where the mood's at.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's something we've done quite a few times as well, is the script. I mean, the turn thing at the start of the day or in the rule book might say the game goes for 12 turns. If things go over time, things go wrong, maybe something happens, like, yeah, cut it early. If you need to, if it's like, this is the climactic moment, and don't be afraid to go off script. That's one of the things that makes mega games awesome, is that they can go off script and you can change things around to do things that are exciting and interesting for the players, and, you know, yeah, taking care of the players. All right. Yeah. And so that might be a lot. We've dumped a lot of information here. I think just to go back to the start, the first step, if you have literally just heard about mega games and you're interested, is to go and check out if there's a mega game in your area in that mega game assembly calendar. If there isn't, see if you can download one of these free rule books, like God Emperor, which is free now, or Aegon's Conquest, that whatever that one's called.
You did it.
Yay, great. That's the first step. Chat to people. While you're doing that, you can chat to people you know in your friend group, see if they're interested, hang out with them. And if people are excited and they're interested in doing it, then that's when you start looking around, see if there's a local library in your area, look at what the materials would be for that mega game rule set you've downloaded, or if you've made one yourself, obviously you'll know what materials are needed. Try Eventbrite for gathering players in, check around local forums if you're having trouble recruiting people, and yeah, look after your control, look after your players. Have fun. Stay calm. I think that's it. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I think that does it for today. We'll be back next week with another awesome interview I'm pretty excited about. Where can people find you, Pat?
Yeah, so people can find me at the Sydney Mega Gamers. So sydneymegagamers.com. We're on Instagram as the Sydney Mega Gamers, and we are on Facebook as the Sydney Mega Gamers, and you can shoot an email to us directly if you're up with that at hello@sydneymegagamers.com.
Awesome. And people can find me at the Brisbane Mega Game Facebook group. If you just Google, if you search Brisbane Mega Game on Facebook, you'll find it. Or you can email me at jack@ashtowngames.com. Or ashtowngames.com is the website to go to check out other rule sets and stuff I've got there. Yeah, but thanks so much for listening and have an awesome day.
thanks again for tuning in and listening. Join us next episode for an interview with Justin and James from the Sydney Mega Gamers as we talk about their first Mega Game design experience with So Say We All from 2019. See you then.